From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. This month, the EPA issued a strongly worded letter to the city of Newark, New Jersey, warning that lead levels in the water for some 14,000 residents might be so high that residents should use bottled water instead. Moreover, the EPA said residents should not rely on filtration devices that the city had previously provided, meaning, yes, lead in the water has been an issue in Newark for some time. But all of a sudden, last week, residents found themselves waiting in long lines for one of life's most basic necessities.
We can be here all day long. I'm not waiting. Forget it. I can buy water. Thank God for that.
Well, at first glance, this sounds a lot like what happened in Flint, Michigan, and there are very similar questions about what actions public officials did or did not take to protect the city's water supply. But in Newark, there's also a more mundane issue. It's about the aging water infrastructure beneath our feet. So this hour on Point, Newark, old lead pipes, and America's aging water infrastructure. And you can join us. How old are the pipes that feed your house? What's the best way to upgrade our aging infrastructure? Are you worried about lead in the water where you live? Now, we did request interviews with Newark Mayor Raz Baraka and other city officials. They declined to join us. However, late yesterday, we did speak with New Jersey Governor Democrat Phil Murphy. And we started by asking Governor Murphy how much longer Newark residents will have to be relying on bottled water.
Well, for the folks who have lead lines and are served by a particular source, which is the Pequannock area, it will be as long as it takes until we are convinced that the drinking water is safe. The source water is absolutely clean. The issue is if you have a lead line emanating from that source, that's the challenge. So it's about 15,000 or so residences in Newark that are served by that one source and these lead lines. So in an abundance of caution, after only three data points, the state, the city have gotten out ahead of this and are providing bottled water for folks.
When you say only three data points, what do you mean?
Three filters in three different wards and three different residences in Newark were tested. So it's based on those three data points that we have said, you know what, we're going to continue to test, which working with Newark and the EPA, we are now doing aggressively to get more data points, as you can imagine. But in the meantime, we're going to provide bottled water for those affected until we're convinced that this is in a better place.
So your points about the lead lines that are, you know, in the last portion of the delivery system to individual homes, point well taken. And I want to explore that with you in just a minute, because that's also the part that definitely, you know, cities around the nation need to be thinking about. So I do want to explore that with you. But to this data point issue, though, as you know, in 2017, the National Resources Defense Council, they learned that Newark had elevated lead levels. I'm seeing reporting here that says independent tests in 2018 showed lead levels in certain places of at twice the EPA's benchmark. In a particular woman's household that the New York Times reports, in February of this year, Shakima Thomas's water in her house was reported at 76 parts per billion of lead. That's five times the EPA's action level. So what's the problem here? Did the city of Newark just not have enough places where they were testing water, or did they know about it more and simply just failed to take action? I mean, it seems people have a hard time buying that three data points is enough for a city to know what's going on in terms of the water coming out of the taps.
Couple of things. The big fix is to replace lead lines. That's going to take a long time. We're going to need federal help. And as you referenced, this is not just a Newark issue. This is in other communities in our state and in communities around the country. Second step, in the meantime, and this is why Newark has been addressing this and we've been working with them, is you can put chemicals, benign, positive, I would call it, chemicals through the pipes that over time coat the inside of the lead pipes and prevent the lead from leaching off the pipe. Newark had been using a chemical for a long time, and back in 2017, that chemical was deemed to losing its effectiveness. So they're now passing another anti-agent through the pipes called orthophosphate. Mm-hmm. The early sense is the orthophosphate. Is it throughputting? The answer is yes. And I don't know, no one knows whether it's tomorrow or 3 months from tomorrow, but that's a very encouraging sign that will address the issues that Newark has dealt with.
So let me just be clear on something, because I want to be sure we've got our facts straight here. In September, the Attorney General for the state of New Jersey argued that Newark was in compliance with the process required for water systems that are no longer deemed to have optimized corrosion control. Was the orthophosphate being added to the water in September of last year, or did that happen later?
Orthophosphate is since, I believe, May of this year.
So what was he arguing then? What was Newark doing to ensure the safety of the water on September 17th of 2018?
I think last year, and again, I'm not sure on the exact dates, I believe last year the prior chemical was still being used and was still being deemed effective.
So as you know, the big question that many residents are asking is, this seems to be a lot like what happened in Flint. Now, granted, the water source in Flint was the issue there.
Yeah,
the source is not the issue here.
Different.
But it's the question of the sense of responsibility and proactiveness of city and state officials that people are calling into question. Was Newark being proactive enough?
I think they are. I absolutely think they are. They have switched the chemicals. They've got a 10-year plan to get out of all the lead lines. Again, we need the federal government's help. There's a lot going on, and we didn't just decide to focus on lead over the past couple of weeks. This is something I talked about when I was running for governor 2 years ago, and that we've been working on with the city from day one.
So two last quick questions here. I mean, what's your advice for other cities in major metropolitan areas to try and get ahead of the problem so they don't end up where Newark has ended up?
With all due respect, I think Newark is getting ahead of the problem. There's no amount of effort or energy that any city or any state can put into this that can match what the federal government can do. Our delegation in both the House and the Senate has been very aggressive in trying to put forward water infrastructure legislation at the federal level,
mm-hmm.
because this is far beyond Newark or any other community in New Jersey. This is a national challenge. That's the X factor that I don't think any amount of effort by the city or state can replace.
Right. It's hugely costly and an issue in many, many cities across the country. But, Governor, one last thing. I think that residents in Newark right now, or the residents who are relying on bottled water for drinking water, would totally disagree with the notion that the city of Newark is ahead of the problem. I mean, what would you tell them?
Well, I don't think, you know, you hear got long lines, I couldn't get bottled water. There's no evidence of that. So that's number one. And we've got state troopers posted at each of these distribution centers. Three data points leading to a distribution of now what is about 1,400 cases of water a day to the affected areas is, in my humble opinion, and I want to shout out to Mayor Raz Baraka in Newark, that's getting out ahead of it. And so I have enormous sympathy with folks who are particularly the most affected, the very young, the pregnant, nursing, and the very elderly, including the city is delivering for folks who don't have the wherewithal to come get the water. It's being delivered to them. And we're just going to keep our nose to the grindstone here and continue to work with the city and until we get this right.
Well, Governor Phil Murphy is the governor of the state of New Jersey. Governor Murphy, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Magna.
And we spoke with Governor Murphy late yesterday. Well, joining us now is Yvette Jordan. She's a resident in Newark in the South Ward of the city. She's a teacher at Central High School. She started a group called New Caucus in 2012 to teach students about social justice. And the New Caucus has been involved in a lawsuit against the city since June of last year over unsafe drinking water. Yvette Jordan, welcome to you.
Oh, thank you.
So first,
happy to be here.
It's good to have you. So first of all, do you have to rely on bottled water right now?
Yes, I do, unfortunately.
Do you know how high the lead levels are in the water that's coming to your house?
Well, my husband and I had our home tested, actually finally, in June of 18 after about 3 or 4 attempts. And my home is 44.2 parts, so that's almost 3 times our federal action level.
Okay. Well, I want to hear your reactions to some of the things that Governor Murphy said. I mean, he asserted yesterday when we talked to him that no one in Newark is waiting in line for bottled water. Is that true?
Well, I think, unfortunately, in some areas, yes, it is true. Initially, when they started handing out water, which was a week ago, on August 19th, I believe, where I live in the South Ward, when I went for water, unfortunately, I only saw about 15 or 20 people, and that was extremely upsetting, obviously. I'm thinking to myself, if really it's a health crisis, why aren't other people actually standing here? So I think there's a lot of apathy, a lot of ignorance, and unfortunately, naivete in terms of what is happening in our community. In addition, when I was online, I saw several elderly there who said, well, I don't know how I'll carry it. One lady, she was walking in on a cane, and I asked her, how are you getting home? And she said, well, I was meeting someone here, and he's not here, so I guess I'll leave. So that has happened at several drop-off centers. And the governor said the mayor has arranged for our elderly and homebound receiving water. I'm not sure if that's so. I know of several cases where they're asking for it and nothing is coming. And other residents and their neighbors are helping them out. Mm. So I'm not sure if that information actually is accurate.
So how much bottled water is the city providing to people? Because, I mean, we're talking about, unfortunately, not for bathing, but for cooking and drinking. I mean, are they providing adequate amounts?
Well, in my home, it's my husband and I, and we received 48 bottles for 1 week. And I'll tell you, it's not enough. And thankfully, I can afford water, and I spend on approximately $30 a week for that. However, in our community, it's extremely high poverty, and many people are indigent, unfortunately, and cannot afford it. So in these situations, you wonder, how are they actually handling this crisis?
Well, Yvette, hold on for just a quick second, because we do have to take a short break here. A few more questions for you when we come back. We're talking about lead in the water in the city of Newark, New Jersey, and the bigger issue it reveals about America's aging water infrastructure in cities across the country. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about Newark, New Jersey, and some 14,000 residents there who've been told by the EPA that they ought to be drinking bottled water because of lead in the tap water in the pipes going to their homes, and the bigger story it reveals about America's aging water infrastructure. I'm joined right now by Yvette Jordan. She is joining us from Newark. She's a resident in Newark's South Ward, a teacher at Central High School, and has been involved in a lawsuit against the city over unsafe drinking water. Yvette, if I may ask you, you heard Governor Murphy in the previous segment when we talked to him say that he said multiple times that he believes the city of Newark is out ahead of this problem. What's your response to that?
I think that's almost comical and sad at the same time. I believe that the Newark city administration is finally doing something, and that's great. However, in terms of reaching everybody, our entire populace, and those mostly affected who are our children under six and pregnant mothers, as well as our elderly, I don't think it's happening as soon and as fast as it should.
Well, I mean, the governor and I presume city officials would also say they have been trying to do something about this issue for a while. I mean, they gave out all those water filters last year, right, to residents who may have needed them. But, of course, the EPA in its letter earlier this month said that new data suggests that the specific filtration devices distributed by Newark may not be reliably effective.
Okay, well, I understand that. However, the city of Newark was approached over a year and a half ago in terms of lead in our water and was initially saying it's not a problem. And then finally, in October of 18, our mayor acquiesced and said, okay, I guess it is an issue, and I'll hand out 38,000 filters. And then on October 9th, when our federal government finally said, well, it seems as if some filters are not working, and therefore you've got to hand out water. So I think over minimally 18 months, our city was not really moving fast enough. Ideally, what should happen, obviously, is lead service line replacement.
Right.
And our governor said, as I heard him on your show, said the source water in Newark is clean. Well, it wasn't treated properly, right? Mm. And finally, in May of 19, they started doing this.
Adding that orthophosphate.
Exactly. Right. So my concern as a resident, as a homeowner, and most importantly, New Caucus's concern as educators of our children, whether it be educators of preschool, all the way through college, we are worried about our students and academic challenges in our classroom, attention issues in our classroom. We are worried about that. And when their families and parents are weighed down with so much in their lives, they are not advocating for themselves. Mm-hmm. We are. Mm-hmm. And that is why we stood up.
So, I mean, is what you're saying there that because what we're talking about are leaded pipes directly feeding people's houses, there may have been lead in the water in some of these neighborhoods for years and years and years, right?
Absolutely. And actually, I think our only way of moving this forward is if our governor actually says it's a state of emergency, because the public education issue in terms of this is really disjointed. So because of that, there is no logistical plan for the residents. Mm. And also because of that, one person is hearing one thing, somebody else isn't sure, others are getting angry. So if we had a coordinated effort, which unfortunately only happens when you have a state of emergency and the state has an EOC, which is an emergency operating center, right?
Right.
Then all of the agencies must work in concert. That is not happening now.
Yvette, I just want to ask you one more question. But first of all, to your point about the state of emergency, the governor said this week he's not going to declare a state of emergency in Newark.
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, at least for the time being. But one last question for you. You said a couple of minutes ago that also there may be some apathy in the community, like perhaps even from some of your students. Is there some difference of opinion about whether people even believe that there's a problem?
Well, I think also you've got to understand our community as well. And our mayor was someone who is born and raised here. So he is a local hero and a local champion. And he was a principal of a high school. He was seen as a community activist who really, he pushed really back against so many things in terms of the establishment. So many people supported him, including myself. So when we see something happening in our community, especially a public health crisis, which is what it is, and then thinking that Roz is not helping us, so many people are saying, no, he wouldn't do that. Mm. So that, I think, is a concern and problem in our community.
Well, Yvette Jordan, joining us from Newark, New Jersey. She's a resident of the South Ward there, a teacher at Central High School, and founder of a group called New Caucus with other educators to teach students about social justice. Yvette Jordan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Well, you heard Ms. Jordan there mention Newark Mayor Roz Baraka. Again, as a reminder, we did reach out to him and ask him to join us today for the program. He declined, but he previously has repeatedly rejected comparisons between the lead contamination issue going on right now in Newark and the Flint, Michigan water crisis. In a press conference back in November, Mayor Baraka defended his administration's handling of the water issue.
What happened in Flint was egregious. I know it's sexy, it sells, it's something to put on the front page. That's not what happened in Newark. Flint purposefully did not put the corrosion control inhibitor in their water. I would stop working. That's a marked and clear difference.
It's Newark Mayor Roz Baraka. Well, in fact, Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha, whose research helped reveal the unhealthy levels of lead in Flint, Michigan's water, in a sense, agrees that the Flint and Newark situations are not the same, but she has an entirely different set of reasons about why.
Newark is not Flint, because right now in Flint, we've almost replaced all of our lead pipes. And everybody in Flint knows we had a problem. Everybody has lead clearing filters. Newark is not there right now. People on the ground don't know fully how to protect themselves. There has not been wide distribution of filters or bottled water.
That's Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha speaking on NJTV this week. Well, joining us now from East Brunswick, New Jersey, is Dimple Chowdhury. She is a senior attorney and managing litigator at the Natural Resources Defense Council and is also lead counsel representing community groups in Flint, Michigan. And also the NRDC is suing the city of Newark as well. Dimple Chowdhury, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Eric Schwartz, assistant professor of marketing at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. He worked in Flint with a Georgia Tech professor to predict the location of lead pipes in a new way without needing to dig the pipes up. And he's continuing to gather data on other cities in the United States. So, Eric Schwartz, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dimple, let me first start with you. The NRDC sued Newark. What are you asserting about Newark's knowledge of the lead problem in the city's water?
Well, there's a lot we don't know yet. So we've sued the city of Newark, and we've alleged that they've been failing to treat the water properly to control for lead release and a host of other violations of the Safe Drinking Water Act, the federal law that protects our drinking water. But there's a lot we don't know. You know, the case was filed last year. As Yvette said, we've kind of been on the ground pushing the city to try to acknowledge this problem for a very long time, and it's been challenging. But we don't know yet who knew what and when. And that's information that we are going to push aggressively for through this lawsuit so that we can understand both the genesis of this problem and the best way to fix it.
Well, you heard that tape from Mayor Baraka just a minute ago saying the difference is that, like, he asserts they were trying to treat the water so that the lead wouldn't leach into it near people's homes, but that treatment's just stopped working. So I guess his assertion would be the city has been trying to be as proactive as possible.
We would take issue with that. As Yvette mentioned, you know, NRDC and New Caucus approached the city of Newark over a year and a half ago to talk about these issues, to try to reach a solution, to make sure they understood the scope of the problem and the public health emergency that was clear to us from the data that was coming out of Newark. And they did not engage with those conversations, and it led to a lawsuit. So I think we would push back and vehemently disagree with the idea that Newark's been proactive. And I would also, you know, take issue with the distinction that Governor Murphy made between Newark and Flint as well. You know, he talked about the source water in Flint as being the real problem there. And as you mentioned, Mayor Baraka talked about kind of the decision, the affirmative decision not to treat the water as being, you know, another distinction there. You know, in Flint, there was a decision to change the water to a different water source, mm-hmm. but the decision that was at the crux of the water crisis was a failure to treat. That water that was being drawn from the Flint River was not treated with orthophosphates, was not treated with corrosion-inhibiting chemicals. That's similar to what we're seeing in Newark in the sense that the treatment was not appropriate. The treatment was not in compliance with the law. And that's not a difference. I think that's a difference without a distinction, or a distinction without a difference. It's not meaningful. The problem is that the chemical treatment failed, and that needs to be addressed. And as you know, you noted at the top of the show, the only permanent fix is to get these lead lines out.
So, Eric Schwartz, I want to know, how widespread is this problem? I mean, are there cities, should cities across the country, or are they just as a normal part of water treatment, adding orthophosphate into the water to be sure that lead doesn't leach into it in the last, you know, couple of yards to people's homes?
Mm-hmm. So that question, and the question of, as Dimble and others were saying earlier, of scope, how big is this problem, how widespread is the problem, gets to the question of how many lead service lines are there? How many lead pipes are connecting the water mains in the street to residents' homes, usually in their basements? And that question, that uncertainty around that, is really the crux of what we've been trying to address, city by city, that is. I think nationwide there's a bigger question. And as others were saying, if the water treatment plan is appropriate, then the water passes through lead pipes without issue. The problem is treatment plans sometimes go awry or change and in unpredictable ways, or construction can disrupt and lead and dislodge it. So as long as those lead pipes are laying buried underground, they're a liability.
I'm just wondering, though, in a lot of American cities, we know we have old housing stock, right? I can't recall the exact year where we stopped using lead pipes for water delivery, but everything—
Mid-1980s,
okay. So it wasn't actually all that long ago. So ostensibly, is it safe to presume that everything built before that has at least some lead pipes as part of the water infrastructure?
It's not completely it. And I think this is one of the reasons where actually using the data and looking at how different households and different homes are, and along many dimensions, and that's really the crux of what we've been doing in terms of using data and using data science and standard machine learning methods, might sound all fancy, but actually it's just that kind of idea. You have a model in your mind that might say anything built before 1985 has lead, anything built after 1985 doesn't. Well, the answer is more nuanced than that. And there are other factors. So the year matters. There are geographic issues that matter. It might be the case that in one neighborhood of a city, homes built in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s perhaps are more likely to have lead. But in another neighborhood, lead wasn't being used there at all in the same era. And so these many factors interact and have these complicated relationships that help us understand which homes and which areas are most likely to have lead.
Uh-huh.
And this is really how we're trying to combine all of those pieces of information using cutting-edge methods in statistics and machine learning to get some estimates and to try to say, well, which homes are more likely to have lead? We don't want to just throw our hands up and say, it's unknown, we don't know. But we also don't want to just make these really strong assumptions to say, all old homes have lead. That's also not true.
Okay. So Dimple Chowdhury, we've just got 2 minutes to go before we have to take a break here. I want to hear your thoughts on something that Governor Murphy said, that initially, you know, there were these three data points he kept talking about. So three places where they were testing the water coming out of people's taps in Newark. I mean, is that a typical number? Was that a satisfactory number? How are we supposed to know where the lead problems are?
Well, first of all, that's not true. Newark has been testing its water under the Safe Drinking Water Act, engaging in compliance testing for a long time, as they're required to do. We have questions about whether that testing has been done in compliance with that law. But as recently as this past the past 6 months, the first half of 2019, their lead levels, the testing results were off the charts, exceedingly high. So the idea that these three samples are kind of the first that the city has known about the magnitude and the scope of the lead crisis is not accurate.
So what does the NRDC seek for the city and the state to do now?
Right now, there's two issues right now pending in Newark. One is making sure that the entire city is protected in this interim period while we're trying to figure out what is the long-term solution. So the city must be providing to all of its residents access to bottled water during this critical time where we don't know exactly what's going on with filters and their efficacy. Longer term, the lead pipes need to come out of the ground. That's the only permanent fix.
Well, Dimple Chowdhury, senior attorney and managing litigator at the Natural Resources Defense Council. She spoke to us today from East Brunswick, New Jersey. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Eric Schwartz, stand by here for just a second. We are talking this hour about Newark and lead in the water for 14,000, possibly 14,000 Newark, New Jersey residents and what that tells us about the aging water infrastructure in other American cities. Do you worry about the amount of lead in the water coming into your home? And if so, how do we fix it? We're talking about thousands upon thousands of American homes. Is a federal level fix required? We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about Newark, New Jersey, and the fact that some 14,000 residents there have been told that perhaps they shouldn't be using the water coming out of their pipes for cooking and drinking because of elevated lead levels there. The EPA this month told them they are better off using bottled water for the foreseeable future. Now, this is an example of the major issue of the aging water infrastructure underneath our feet in the ground in many American cities. The issue in Newark is that a lot of homes there still have lead pipes feeding into their homes from the water mains. So Newark resident Rose Crenshaw spoke to PBS affiliate NJTV last week, and she talked about the high lead levels found in the water inside many Newark homes.
At this point, it feels like it's a Band-Aid that they're using to, I guess, lull everyone to think that everything is okay. But it isn't enough. If the pipes need to be replaced, let's do that. Mm-hmm. We're paying for water. I'm a homeowner. So we're paying for water that we cannot use.
I'm joined today by Eric Schwartz. He's an assistant professor at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. He worked with Georgia Tech researchers in Flint, Michigan, to figure out new ways to predict the location of lead pipes without digging those pipes up. And he's continuing to gather data on other U.S. cities. Well, let's just go to our phones here briefly. Tom is calling from Waterloo, Iowa. Tom, you're on the air.
I just wanted to say that the problem is a lot bigger than just one or two cities. I inspected many water main projects, and the pipes that were taken out were a lot of times cast iron that were packed with lead joints, and we had goosenecks in a cast iron water service. And that's just a flexible 2-foot piece of pipe, but it was lead. Mm. And you haven't mentioned the solder that they use for internal plumbing for years and years. So it's going to take a federal effort to nationwide all over the country. Mm-hmm. Plus, now they're using plastic pipe, and they talk about microplastics in our water. So we need study. We need federal.
Yeah.
Programs.
Tom, thank you so much for your call. So Eric Schwartz, Tom, they're kind of a construction inspector. What shape would a federal or should a federal effort take?
Well, Tom knows his stuff. That is exactly what we've been hearing. And I think the federal effort is going to have to be really large. Just to put it in perspective, $100 million plus went into Flint, Michigan to remove its pipes. Hmm. And it's not finished yet. So the scale of this, estimates are really rough, as I was saying, but nationwide, the estimates are between 5 and 10 million lead service lines. And that would include, as the caller was just saying, it could be just one portion of the service line. So it could be the part that goes from your curb to the home. It could be the part that goes from the main to the curb, or even a portion of a few feet. That's called a gooseneck, a lead gooseneck. So about 5 to 10 million of those. Yet some of the other estimates of actual costs are in the tens of billions and even up to hundreds of billions of dollars nationwide.
It would seem that the hundreds of billions, if you scale it out, would be probably where we would land, because even in Newark, I'm seeing estimates here that they're saying that some 18,000 lead pipes need to be replaced there, could cost $75 million.
Yeah, and again, that uncertainty. So we're hearing a range of numbers from 14,000 to 15,000 to 18,000. And that's just Newark alone. So you take that range and you expand that nationwide. What we need is a lot more information. This question of how many data points, that's really a tremendous deal. We need to be collecting more information. And in order to do that, we need to be really encouraging states and cities to create programs and funding available so that contractors, construction workers can go out and start inspecting. And that's really a key part of what happened in Flint in 2016, starting then and continuing after that.
So this has to be yet another chapter in the ongoing sad saga of the United States neglecting its, I don't think neglecting is too strong a word, neglecting its infrastructure for decades, isn't it?
Sure, absolutely. And I think the issue is multifaceted. It's an economic issue. It's an environmental justice issue. It's a social just and political issue. It's a pure information issue, certainly a public health and public policy issue. It's massive.
Let's take a quick call here. Justin is calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Justin, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Milwaukee's had its own obfuscation and challenges with this lead in the water issue. And as a homeowner, they're solved. Like what they've offered as solutions is to fix these little pipes that connect to the house. But they feel like Band-Aids, and they don't feel like they would fix like the bigger lead pipe issue, and especially not for people that aren't in a position to maybe financially pay for those fixes or pay for the filters. It really just feels like the people that are most in need, that are most impacted, are not being heard or not being offered the resources here and in another place, country.
Yeah. Well, Justin, thank you so much for your call. So Eric Schwartz, stand by for a moment, because I want to turn to another U.S. city here to see what's been done there about this lead in the water issue. So joining us now from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is Margaret Krause. She's a reporter for WESA, Pittsburgh's NPR station, where she covers development and transportation issues. And she has reported on what Pittsburgh has done to address high lead levels in the water. And we have links to her reporting at onpointradio.org. Margaret, welcome to the program.
Hi, Magna. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So tell us a little bit about, was or is lead in the water an issue in Pittsburgh?
Well, both, yes.
Okay.
Pittsburgh is a little bit different from what listeners have been hearing about Newark or Flint. Pittsburgh's water authority was spun out. It is no longer a city department. It is an independent authority. And part of the wrinkle to our story is that in 2012, PWSA, Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority, sort of outsourced day-to-day management to a private company, and they had a joint profit-sharing contract. And so in 2016, we exceeded lead levels. It was a big deal, and we've spent the last 3 years trying to address that issue. It remains we exceeded lead levels again in our latest six-month testing, but it is lower, and we started at the Water Authority. Sorry, I keep saying we because I'm here in Pittsburgh. The Water Authority started adding this corrosion control mix of orthophosphate in April here.
What was the determination about why the lead levels rose?
Mostly because, well, PWSA and the city and Veolia, which was the private company, settled the case. But there was a change in the corrosion control. So it went from soda ash to caustic soda, which sounds bad. Caustic just sounds bad. But most people say it was the chemical, the corrosion control change that broke down that protective layer that had formed within the pipe and so allowed lead to leach from the pipes into our water system.
Okay. So did it get fixed?
Yes. Well, it's still in the process of being fixed. There was an immediate response was a private company stepped up to contribute $500,000 to match with the city's money to buy water filters for people's homes, no matter if they're renting or owning, whatever their income level was. And then the Water Authority has worked incredibly hard over the last 3 years to address its finances, which is something I'd like to talk a little bit more about, how much of this does come down to money, as Mr. Schwartz said, and to just get on track with identifying where are the lead lines and creating a replacement program. But what orthophosphate does in Pittsburgh is it buys the Water Authority time.
Mm-hmm.
It is, they will tell you it is the most effective way to protect the most number of people while the cost of lead line replacement is played out over a number of years so that people aren't in crisis and aren't drinking lead-tainted water while they wait for their line to be replaced.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense, right, because it provides an interim fix that gives you the many years it might take to get to all those lead lines. So you wanted to talk a little bit more about the issue of how a lot of this comes down to money. So tell me more.
Yes. So forgive me, I'm a nerd. But public water authorities can borrow money at much better rates than a private company can. And PWSA, Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority, had these bonds, these municipal bonds that they had bought to, you know, run the show, do capital improvement work, but they were variable rate bonds. So PWSA had this terrible, like, money was just hemorrhaging from the system. So they had to do a lot of the hard work here was addressing the debt and dealing with increasing rates in a way that wasn't onerous for people who don't have a lot of money to spend on their water bill. So as we look at what the federal government could do, there are cities in New Jersey, for instance, that have sold their water to a private company because they say they don't have the money to handle it. But a private company has shareholders to serve.
Right.
And so they're certainly going to raise rates, probably at a rate higher than a public water authority. So a lot of the hard work, it seems like, as we face this problem as a nation, is for public water authorities to address their debt in a way that allows them to raise rates carefully for their lowest income customers.
Margaret, we love nerdiness.
Hooray!
Look, I used to cover public transportation where I'm located, and the idea of debt restructuring for public transportation authorities, well, I could nerd out with you on that for hours, but we only have 6 minutes left in the show, Margaret, so hang on here. Eric Schwartz, I heard you kind of muttering an affirmation there.
Yeah, bring it on. Let's nerd out about how to fund service line replacement nationwide.
So tell me more.
Well, it's a tricky thing because a lot of cities have the situation where half of the service line is owned by the customer, by the individual resident, and the other half, the one that's closer to the water main, so-called the public or the utility owned, is owned by either a private utility company or the public or the city itself. And that makes fixing everything and removing all of the lead really complicated because you need to coordinate with the homeowner and the utility company and the contractors that are actually doing the replacement. And if in certain cases of crisis and emergency, that's when, say, the state or the federal government will step in, as it has in several cities, for example, in Flint and others, to say, you know what, we're going to take care of the cost of both portions of that service line. That's not going to be sustainable nationwide for the next 10 to 20, 30 years.
Let's get
and
one.
So
oh, no, go ahead.
Creative financing, either through debt or other means, I think is something that is going to have to happen. And in addition, even if we know the scope, even if we have a plan for financing, we have to still be efficient. We have to be thinking about how can we take a very limited budget in each city and stretch it as far as we can to maximize the positive impact, to minimize the number of time that people are living with the risk of lead poisoning in their water. And that's a tricky problem. That's to geek out a little bit, that's the optimization problem that brings a marketing data scientist like myself and a computer scientist like Jake Abernathy at Georgia Tech to this kind of problem. We see that and are trying to just give a glimmer of some of our expertise to this.
Let's take one more call while we have time. Katrina is calling from Buffalo, New York. Katrina, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to know how an individual person could check the lead in their home, and as well as if they think they were affected, how would they go about getting medical testing?
Oh, Katrina, thank you so much for your call. I'd say that probably the answer to the second half of your question is to go to the doctor, and you can get a blood lead test. They do it for children very frequently. But Eric Schwartz, what about her question about how do you know about how much lead, the lead levels in the water that coming into your home?
Yeah, that's two. So two answers to that. One is the water lead levels, and you can take a water lead testing kit. A lot of cities now are giving those away, like in Newark perhaps, and in Flint was the case. Or you can buy one of those and do that at home, send it away, and see the resulting lead levels. The other is actually go and look at your pipes. And so there's a variety of scratch tests. Take something and scratch the physical pipe and see the color that's revealed. Usually you've got some pipe coming into the home, perhaps in the basement or right at the water meter that's exposed. You would actually identify that. One of the limitations, however, is the fact that those were those two portions of the service line I was talking about. Well, if you see that the portion of your pipe going into your home is copper, it doesn't mean that the portion that leaves the water main is also copper. And so you could have copper going into the home, which would be relatively safer, no lead, but it still could have a lead service line portion going from the water main to around the part of your curb. And so in-home inspections are necessary and important, and all cities and contractors that are doing this work absolutely need to look inside the home in addition to digging up some of the ground and using statistics. But we really don't know for certain until a hole is dug through any means and people actually can look visually and inspect both portions of those service lines.
This is such a black box problem. It's so fascinating and slightly scary, to be perfectly honest.
It is a bit scary, and I think that's the uncertainty is we know there's a problem, but we literally can't see it. Lead is invisible, and the lead pipes, which are very easy to see, are buried underground. So the question is, and I wouldn't say that we are, the data nerds that we are, it's not like we have some magic that we're able to see through the ground. There's no technology that currently allows people to detect whether the metal pipe beneath the ground is lead versus copper. Mm-hmm. If there is, somebody should go out there and use it. But right now, it's a matter of using either a backhoe and dig up that ground and asphalt, or a much cheaper and more efficient inspection method that's just as accurate as is something called a hydrovacuum. Mm. It really just uses high-pressure water and moves the ground, and you can see right down.
Margaret Krause, we've just got 30 seconds left to go, but I want to just ask you finally, I mean, is there anything that Pittsburgh experienced that like is good news in how to solve this problem or address it?
Yes, if you have the will to do it, you can. And certainly there's been a lot of cooperation between utilities as PWSA begins replacing its lines to say, hey, if you're going to dig up the street there, we know there's some lead lines and we'd like to replace it. And also the state had said, oh, we can't do the private side, as Eric mentioned. But there has been cooperation. Pennsylvania will now allow Pittsburgh to replace both sides of a homeowner's line, both the public and the private.
Well, Margaret Krause, reporter for WESA, Pittsburgh's NPR station. It was great to have you, Margaret. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Eric Schwartz, assistant professor at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.